Hello and welcome to Hustle for Everything podcast. This podcast will receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. Today, we're at 170 Baldwin Street talking to the heartbreak chef himself, Jerome Robinson. Yo, I'm excited. It's going to be a good one. We're going to chef it up. We're going to have a good talk about business. Let's tap in. Let's go. So, deal or no deal? Ready for this?
Let's do it.
All right. So, you link up with the old homie and you think back in your brain of all the times you had, and you remember when you started chefing up and he talked to you and he was hating on you.
Okay.
But, you know, time moves on and you kind of reconcile, and he's like, yo, I'm having a wedding and I need someone to cater the wedding. But we're on a budget, you're trying to save up for a house, and we need it to be very cost effective, you know. Can you do this at cost? Deal or no deal?
So that, you know what, when you say homie, that depends, because there's two different types of homies. There's the homie that, like you said, is always hating on you and has never helped you. And then there's the homie that like will roast you every now and then, but you know when it comes deep down to it, they got your back. So if I know this guy has had my back and, you know, we're childhood friends, and I know that if I know the favor would be returned if I needed it, 100%.
So I'm going to put it to you like this. Yeah. He is the 50-50 homie.
The 50, no.
Because there's a 50-50 homie. That's
yeah, there. I know what the 50-50 homie is.
And he might come through, but he also might not. If he has a girl, he's like, nah.
Yeah, nah, the 50-50 homie, like, you got to pay. You got to pay. Because if you were really my homie too, and you're supporting me, I don't even think you would ask and put me in that position. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that you would want me, you wouldn't guilt me into that. Like, if you can't afford it, have a smaller wedding. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it is. But if you're my boy and, you know, like thick and thin, and I know that you would return the favor and I know that you've helped me out of jams, then 100% I'm going to do it for you. Mm. You know what I mean? And that might even be my wedding gift to you at my cost, not even yours. You know what I mean? So it all depends, because we all have friends like that. We have the 50-50 homie, and then we have the 100%, like, that's my guy right there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Most definitely. Nah, I rock with that.
Yeah.
I rock with that. For me, he got to pay too. You be hating on me a little bit in the past? Give me my money.
Yeah.
I need that.
Yeah. I need that. That's a fact, man. I agree, man. I need that money.
I need that money, you know? Listen. So now, how much of your business is catering versus the other aspects of the business?
So our catering like really just started picking up last year. Mm. So it's about 70% like walk-in and apps and stuff like that, and about 30% catering. Mm. So as before, the past couple of years, it was like maybe 10% to 90% walk-in. But this year, I'm really trying to push it like 50-50. Like, wow. I want the catering to be just as big as the people coming into the restaurant. So we'll see how that goes.
Nah, most definitely. But let's take a step back, you know, because this is the second I'd be on the pod, but that was, I felt like
yeah, that was a long time lifetime ago. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
So let's catch up from then, you know. At that point you had your shop, I think it was on Queen, was it?
Yeah, Queen, you know? In Parkdale, yeah.
What has been the biggest challenge during that time of your life?
So just kind of like navigating, because, you know, when I first opened the Queen one, that was where all my focus was. And I got into a place where I was allowed to, like, not allowed, I was able to take, like, personal space. I was able to, you know, take time to myself. And then kind of like, we were only there for 6 months. And then right after that, I opened up another one. Like, I closed that one and we moved to Dundas. And it, like, the process, like, started all over. Mm. And it was, you know, it was a bigger space. We focused on more things. I started doing more partnerships. So it's like all the momentum and how I trained my brain to be able to take off me time kind of went out the window, and I kind of had to go. I kind of got back to my old ways of when I first opened the restaurant. And, you know, it's just like every couple months I would try and do something new. So it was really hard for me to just get that me time and that work-life balance.
No, I feel you. Especially as a chef, that's one of the biggest things I've seen as a challenge. This podcast is brought to you by Narai Cellars Wine, one of the only black owned wine companies in Canada. So not only are you supporting the show, but you're supporting Black ownership. Now, who is Narai Sellers Wine? They have 10 years of experience in winemaking. So what we're going to do is going to hit the link below and visit naraisellers.ca and try the wine for yourself. Let's get back into the show.
You know, we interviewed a few chefs in the past, and one of the main things they were saying is that, you know, when it comes to Christmas time, you're in the kitchen, you know, when it comes to Mother's Day, that's the biggest time for you.
Yeah.
You know, so how are you able to balance that and be intentional with friends and family?
To be 100% honest, like, I'm working on that. Like, I still haven't even been able to figure that out fully. I've missed a lot of my friends' kids' birthdays. I've missed family events and things like that. Like, it's something that's been challenging for me, but it is also is something that I do recognize, mm-hmm. and I am trying to fix it, but my brain isn't programmed like a lot of other people's brain. Like, I like, this is my drug. Work is my drug. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So this is like, I guess you could say I'm a workaholic. So to turn that off all of a sudden at the age I am now, after I've been in this industry so long, it's difficult, but yeah. I'm working towards it. So we'll see.
Yeah, it is difficult, man. Have you ever had the experience where you're not working, but your brain just won't shut off?
Man, that's me all the time. You know what I mean? And it takes me back to when I first opened my restaurant.
Yeah.
I would get a bad review. And I mean, this would haunt me for weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I would be obsessing, going back constantly, like reading my reviews, like sitting there now. It's like you take it as a grain of salt. You can't please everybody. The best restaurants get bad reviews. Nobody's going to get a perfect, like, not, you're not going to please everybody. But back then, my mind wasn't programmed like that. I thought of it as, you're taking a shot at the restaurant. You're taking a shot at me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, this is my heart and soul. And you're basically telling me that the effort and what I'm doing sucks to you. And it's not good enough. You know what I mean? And that was very crushing. And it took a lot for me to finally get out of that mind state and be like, look, man, you can't satisfy everybody. Like, and if you don't have people hating on you, then you're not doing it right. Like, not everybody's gonna like your stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? But as long as I know that people came in here and got at least good service, you can go out and have bad food. But you know what I mean? If the service is terrible, you're gonna remember the service over the food. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's what it is.
So now, one of the main things you have is sandwiches.
Yeah. Right?
What takes a sandwich from good to great in your opinion?
So like we talked about earlier, that yeah, like it's got to be, you know, a lot of people can fry chicken, a lot of people can cook a burger, but the bun to me is the most important. So we use potato buns. I like them because they're soft. They add a good texture with the crunch of the chicken. A lot of burger people use potato buns as well, or they use brioche, which is another great bun. Like, you can't go wrong with either of those two, but to me, it's gotta be the bun, and it's gotta be bread to meat ratio. Like, you can't have this big ass bun and then a little burger or a little piece of chicken sitting in that bun and the whole burger is bread. You know what I mean? It's gotta be a balance, but definitely, I'm definitely a Martin's guy. Shout out to Martin's. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Martin's cutting the check?
They're going to after this.
Almost definitely. And speaking of which, man, like, that's been one of the biggest things that I've seen as a compliment to your strategy when it comes out to online. You're able to not only have a brand as a chef, but as a brand as a content creator. You know, talk about that. Was that intentional? Like, building that up?
No, like, when I first started, I didn't even know that, like, people pay you to do stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I didn't know that you could make another revenue stream off promoting stuff and things like that until people started reaching out. Like, I didn't have people around me that were doing this on their own. Like, a lot of the chefs I knew in the industry, yeah, they've been in the industry a long time, but they were working for bigger corporations and things like that. So you don't get those opportunities when you're working for those types of corporations. So when people started reaching out, I was like, oh, okay. And then that's when I started maybe taking my Instagram and my social media a little more serious, because that's where you can make a lot of money off that. And there are a lot of people making a lot of money off that, and a lot of chefs out there that are using that as a second revenue stream aside from their business.
Most definitely. Now, what's interesting about it is that, because the 24K follower, I think 26 now or 24?
I think it's like 25, but I'm not going to lie, I'm stuck on 20. It's hard to get over that.
Stuck over there?
Yeah.
do you look at it as just found money? Like, oh, this is just extra? Or you're like, all right, let me expect this to come in every month and be a part of like the revenue stream that I'm counting on every month?
Yeah, so I consider it as extra revenue because it's not like you don't have a set contract with, hey, this month you're going to post this, this, and this,
yeah.
and then we're going to pay you this, this, and this. Like yeah. people reach out. We talk about a plan. I might want to work with them again. I might not. They might want to work with me again. They might not. So for things like that, I just consider that towards like, you know, putting that towards the restaurant expenses and stuff like that. And then everything after that is just a bonus.
Yeah. And one of the ads that's how you did was the Milk Master.
Oh, yeah.
like talk to us about being on a competition show.
Yeah. So Milk Masters was like, that was such a dope experience. Like all those chefs, like I knew a lot of them. Like it was kind of like a surprise for us, but I've either worked with them or I've known about them in the industry and I got a lot of respect for what they do. So like kind of competing against them was fun. It was nice. So, you know, I really enjoyed it. And when they reached out, I was like, it's a no brainer to do that. And you know, I've done other competition shows and I've always like finished second or whatever. Mm-hmm. Even on this one, I finished second. So, yeah, yeah. So it's like, it is like a little shot to the ego yeah. after a while when you keep on finishing second. But like the competition shows are fun. Like, you know what I mean? It's like everyone wants to win, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you got me this time, like type mm-hmm. of thing. Like we all know we do what we do and we do it well. But, you know, sometimes there's every chef has its day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you, bro. Do you find a bigger impact from competition shows or like straight TV where you're on like Marilyn Dennis or you're on like a spotlight?
Oh, definitely like when I was on Marilyn Dennis, like that helped me exceptionally, like especially during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It helped me reach a new demographic that I probably wouldn't have hit elsewhere. And she was great. The staff there was absolutely amazing. And it really made me feel, that's how I got comfortable on camera by doing that. Cause when we first started doing the shows, it was remotely.
Yeah.
So I kind of got, even though it was a nationally syndicated show, I kind of got comfortable talking and speaking like to a big time host, to having, you know, people in my ear talking to me. And, you know, so if I didn't do that, I probably wouldn't be as comfortable as I am now on camera, to be completely honest. And like I said, it helped me reach a new demographic of people that I know I probably wouldn't have, maybe I eventually would have, but I wouldn't have hit so fast from opening.
Was that live?
At first, so during the pandemic, it was through Zoom.
Yeah.
Remote.
And it was like a live Zoom.
Yeah, live Zoom. And then after that, it moved to the studio. Like it slowly started open. Things started slowly opening up. And then it moved to the studio. And then from the studio, it moved to the live audience. So, but the rush where you get from the live audience is it doesn't compare to when you do it remote. Like it's so much fun.
I bet, man. Being in front of a live audience is an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel like you're going into like a professional sport almost.
Yeah, exactly. And it is a little more nerve wracking. Like, you know, like not to say that you can just do whatever you want when you're doing remote or whatever, but when there's a live audience, there's people. Literally, you look up and there's people sitting there staring at you, watching your every move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but again, like I said, the adrenaline and the rush that you get from it is pretty cool.
Well, let me ask you something, bro. Because like, actually, the other day, right, I had some of my friends and family coming over to the crib.
Yeah.
And one of their favorite meals is chickpea curry.
Okay. Right?
And I've never made chickpea curry before in my life.
Mm.
So I'm there. I started laying out the ingredients, you know, the Jamaican curry, coriander, salt and pepper. I'm like, all right, about to start making this chickpea curry for the first time. Someone that has their favorite meal as chickpea curry.
Yeah.
I look at the chickpea curry, looks back at me.
It was one of those.
And I'm like, nah, this isn't going to do it.
Did you serve it?
I didn't do it at all.
Oh, okay,
I made chicken breast. I was like,
this
ain't it. Because I just didn't have the confidence at that time to go in it. Because I knew it was my first time making something that has that as their favorite.
Yeah.
You know? When did you have the confidence to know I can now serve this as a meal to someone that has, you know, a sandwich as their favorite meal?
You know what? Like, that's a good question. Just years of doing it. Like, before I opened up my restaurant, I was working in kitchen. I've been working in kitchen since I was like 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a lot of experience. I've been managing restaurants, opening up restaurants, like, long before this. A lot of people don't understand. They think that I kind of like snap my fingers and I open this. Like, I've been in the industry a very, very long time. So, like, just toying with stuff like throughout the years and stuff like that, and watching people eat my food, and, you know, entering competitions through like different jobs that I was at and doing well, and people telling, like, eating my food and telling me, yo, this is dope. Like, mm-hmm. And when I was younger, I used to make lunch for my friends and stuff like that. And, you know, they loved it. So I was like, yeah, this is something I can do. I didn't take it serious when I was younger, but as I got older, I was like, yeah, like, this is something I could definitely do. Like, this is something I can do for the rest of my life.
So you kind of always had it in your back pocket, like, this is my thing.
Yeah. And my mom is a great, like, my mom and grandma were both amazing yeah. cooks. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they can throw down. Like, yeah. they can definitely throw down in the kitchen. So I took a lot of inspiration from what they do.
What's their background? Like, what's their ethnicity?
So my mom's like Saint-Kitian.
Saint-Kitian.
Yeah, Saint-Kitts. You can edit that part out. I don't know if that's how, but Saint-Kitts and Polish. Oh. And my grandma's Polish and my dad's side is West Indian, Jamaican. And both sides of the family can really throw down.
That's very interesting, man. First off, I didn't know that being from Saint-Kitts about Saint-Kitts.
Kitchen. I don't quote me on that. I'm sorry to all the people from Saint-Kitts. We gotta Google that. But anyway, there is a line of like Saint-Kitts or Kitchen, whatever.
Yeah.
Again, my apologies. Gotcha, somewhere down the line there, but yeah. Is it Kitchen? Right. See, I take my apology back. Yeah.
Most definitely, bro. So what were some of the music y'all made that were like really started to
So I come from a very multicultural family.
Yeah.
Like, if you see me standing next to my grandma had like blonde hair. Sometimes it was red, sometimes blue eye. Like, you know what I mean? Like, like my whole family is just all over the place culturally. So I got to experience like all types of food. Like, I had West Indian food growing up. I had Italian food growing up. Like, you know what I mean? I still ate mac and cheese and grilled cheese sandwiches and stuff like that. Like, my parents had me young. Shout out to them for That's sacrificing. Nice. But I grew up around a lot of great food and family functions. We had great, great meals, and everybody in my family can cook. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody, my brother, he's in Paris right now, owns a restaurant down there.
Really?
Yeah. So even he got the cooking bug as well. You know what I mean? And he's doing his thing. So yeah, I could never say that I wasn't brought up around different types of food and things like that. So.
Dope. It's like a family of it. So, you know, it's like a family of artists.
Yeah. And that's both sides of the family. That's not just one. Like, that's like my dad's side as well. Everyone can throw down in the kitchen there. And then my mom and my grandma could really cook.
So then, did you get a warning of the craziness that is being in the kitchen and being a chef? Or was anyone just like, hey, you know that like people are going crazy back then?
Yeah, you know what? Not really. Like, I remember when my first job, my mom told me to get a job, and I was a busboy at a restaurant. I didn't want anything to do with the kitchen. I just wanted to have a job. You know, you're a kid. You just want to buy some video games and stuff like that. And I used to look back in the kitchen and I never wanted any part of it. Like, I would just greet people at the door, serve brunch, clear plates and bring them back. And then one day I was like, you know what? I was like probably 14 or 15. I was like, I really need to get in the kitchen. I want to cook. I think it might be fun. Mm. So I used to wake up at like 6 a.m, take a 2-hour bus ride to the airport. I worked at a place called Pat and Mario's. It's not there anymore, but the kitchen was just filled with just older jaded men. So you picture a 14-year-old there hanging around grown-ass men with real life problems and listening to these guys complain about their lives and complain about their wives and wives complaining about their husbands, and it gave me some serious trauma. And I was like, I need to get out of here and figure out something else. And I moved to another location, and again, I was a front of house person because I didn't want to do the kitchen. Mm. And I remember this is when Method Man used to wear his hair half out. Yeah, I used to wear the half afro. So I remember one day I had braids and I came to work and did that. And my manager lost his shit on me. he lost it. He said, "You can't, if you want to wear your hair like that, you basically, your ass is in the kitchen." So there was a guy who I still talk to this day. His name's Rob. And he was like a rock star to me, like young skater guy. But like watching this guy work was like literally a work. It was a work of art. And I was just like, I want to do that. Like and he like showed me around. He showed me the ropes and I just fell in love with it from there. So yeah.
So now off camera we're talking, you're like, listen, there was a moment where I was like, I had absolute enough of being in a professional, you know, big business kitchen.
Yeah.
What was that moment for you?
So there was kind of like a couple moments that led up to it, but the moment like I was actually like, I can't do this any longer was it's probably like, I want to say maybe 2010, maybe 2012. I can't remember the exact year. And I just remember I used to work at this restaurant in Mississauga. And this owner of the restaurant just used to email me and call. And mind you, I already mentally checked out a long time ago, to be completely honest. And just used to add like numbers. And he used to drive me crazy. And then I remember pulling in one day and just sitting in my car for like an hour and just deciding like if I want to get out of my car and go to work. And I did it because I needed to make a living. But from that point on, I was like, this isn't for me. This isn't for me. And then I got hired by another company, which was great. Like I learned so much and I helped them with their training program. And it was downtown. Shout out to Elephant and Castle. I'll give them a shout out. Great company. Great people there. I had a great time, learned a lot. And then from there, I was able to leverage that and get another position. I did it for the money, to be honest. Like, don't always do things for the money. It was a hard lesson I learned. The grass isn't always greener. And I went to another company. And then that one is what really opened my eyes, where I was like, I got to get the hell out of here. Just like, I'm not going to say they treated me bad or anything like that, but it was just like, it opened my eyes to say like, I don't want to be in the corporate environment anymore. Like, and nothing wrong with people that work in the corporate environment. Like, it works for some people, but when I feel I give so much of myself and what I do, the corporate environment doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. Like, then I'm splitting that with someone else. So I'm giving you my 100%, but you're only giving me your 20 or your 10 and you don't give a shit. Like, you can replace me tomorrow, you know what I mean, like at the drop of a hat, and not even care. So like that's where I decided, like, if I'm gonna put this much effort into what I do, then if my business is gonna fail, it's gonna be because of me. It's not gonna be because of anybody else. It's gonna be because of me. So that's when I decided, like, I started like my Instagram page and started telling people I had a catering company and put a logo on some clothes, and I was like, this is it. Like, quit my job. Moved out of my apartment because I couldn't afford it. Like, was like basically for a couple months, like almost, I guess you could almost say homeless. You know what I mean? Like, just to try and get this off the ground. And it just was so happened that I had a friend in the industry that had a successful restaurant, Andrew. And he took me in and he was like, yo, we can do stuff here. Like, I believe in this brand. Like, you got a good thing. Like, he was probably the first one that was like, let's sit down. Like, this can work. Like, cause I didn't know if it could work. I was iffy, even though I quit my job and stuff. I still had like the doubts of, you know, like, man, maybe I should go back and, you know, ask for my old job back or whatever it is. But he was like, no, we're going to stick with this and you're going to be able to build this brand. And he kind of gave me that confidence to start doing some stuff. And then I had another friend that had a restaurant, my boy AJ. And he let me do the catering for his work. So a lot of people that say when you reach a certain point that you didn't have help is bullshit. Like, you need help from some people. And I've been lucky enough to have like a very good support system and people who support me. My mom, like my friends, I do have supportive friends that believed in me and, you know, gave me the confidence to do what I'm doing now. So I shout out to them. They did. And I did learn a lot from them about running businesses and stuff like that. So I'm appreciative for those people in my life.
You know what they get? They get food at their wedding.
Yeah, that's exactly. They get the free food at the wedding. Yeah, no, definitely. Like I agree. But anybody that's successful, you have to have someone in your corner
for sure
that supports you and says, you know what, like when you feel like shit and you feel like you can't do this, they're like, no, you can do this. Get up, stop feeling sorry for yourself and do this.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's so important. You know, at that moment when you're a bit borderline homeless, trying to figure it out, you know, what were some of the things that got you on that path and said, all right, this is the new way forward? Wasn't creating the big ass chicken sandwich at that time? What were some of the steps that made you like, oh, okay, here's some of the things that can put one foot in front of the other to work towards building this catering company, getting everything going?
So with my sandwich names and stuff like that, I realized like when people go out, they're paying their money. They're doing this, they're doing that. They want to have fun. You know what I mean? They don't just want to come in somewhere. They want to feel a part of something. Mm-hmm. So like, I was like, you know what? I'm going to throw some names on these sandwiches. So when you say it, you're kind of saying it, but you're giggling it at the same time. Mm-hmm. People bring their kids in all the time and the kids are like, mommy, can I say it? And they're like, yeah. And then the kid will order. And that just kind of makes people feel a part of something. So I knew once I started doing that, I did it at the CNE to start in back in 2018. I did the CNE. That was kind of like my big thing that I first started doing. And seeing the reaction of people coming and ordering like these crazy names. And we also did like crazy like sandwiches, stuff that I wouldn't do now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I'm not going to lie, like I wanted to make money and I wanted to get my name out there. So I was doing just crazy stuff that you wouldn't order for dinner, but you would order at the CNE. You know how the CNE is.
Yeah, CNE has the craziest.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
It has the absolute craziest meal.
Yeah, their food
is going to deep fried Oreo.
Yeah. But I was doing like a s'more fried chicken sandwich, like stuff like that, like stuff you would never like be like, oh, I'm hungry, let me go have that. You're doing it for Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I knew that. I knew people were going to post it, like regardless of the feedback and people being like, oh, that's gross or whatever. It's the CNE. Like that's what you're going to do. So, but I also knew that doing stuff like that wasn't going to be sustainable if I wanted to open up a restaurant, because gimmick stuff like that, like it doesn't last long. Like the food you could have all the gimmicky stuff in the world, but if your food isn't good, if people don't like it and people don't think that you care about it, they're not going to come. You know what I mean? They'll come for a bit, but after that, they're not going to continue to come. So that's when I kind of changed my approach and is like, okay, like, yeah, I'm going to do oversized stuff. Yeah, my food could be extreme, but also like you're going to order it. You come in here to eat because you're hungry. You come in here because it tastes good, not just because it has a funny name or because it's Instagrammable, you know what I mean? And that's, I think that's the difference from when I started before to now.
Got it. So it's almost like you found the PR opportunity and then you let your skills hone in on the back end. So you got the attention from the PR food and then let the real food speak in the
back end. Exactly.
That's smart. A lot of entrepreneurs, they'll have that thick layer of the core like skill set, but they don't have that PR side of them.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think you have been honing on, because the way you be shooting on Instagram, the way you play into that a strategy to get people's attention and then let the real food follow through on the back end.
100%. Like I just feel you gotta adapt. Like the days of like, you know, chefs not having a face and just being in the kitchen and you know, people thinking they're mean and all they do is yell at each other. Yeah, like you still have like people on TV, your Gordon Ramsay and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, like, I just mean like the old school for like chefs in Toronto, like they're not like that anymore. They're young, they're vibrant, they're outgoing, they're nice. You know what I mean? Like they're down with the culture. They know what's going on. Like that whole thing has completely shifted. So I was like, I need to show my personality. Like people will relate to you more when you show your personality. And that's why I try and do that as much as I can.
Humans buy from humans. You know?
Exactly.
Man,
exactly.
Let me tell you. So I do Facebook marketing, you know, that's one of my things. And we had a guy who had a sign of him winning an award from Homestars. But his smile in the photo was just like a mean mug.
Like he wasn't even happy.
Not at all. I got this, you know, like Kanye with his
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we photoshopped a smile onto his face.
Yeah.
And can I tell you, bro, that ad, when we started putting that smile on him thing, yo, it started cranking.
Yo, that's amazing.
Just from the smile.
Yeah.
You know, because humans buy from humans.
It's true.
People want to support someone that's actually happy to win something that says like,
that it matters.
I've achieved something that matters to me.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're watching, so you're an entrepreneur, show yourself and show some of the wins you've had.
Exactly. And you could still show the wins you had without bragging about it.
Facts.
You could still be humble. And that's one thing that I've kind of had to adjust to and try and teach myself. Like, it's okay to be like, yeah, you know what? That's awesome. Like, that's an amazing thing that happened. You don't have to rub it in people's face. You're not wishing bad things on other businesses or other people in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. But you're allowed to say to yourself, like, yo, I worked really hard for this and I deserve to feel good about it. Like, you don't have to feel guilty for being excited about your business and what you want to do. You know what I mean? So that's another thing that I've learned as well. Like, I joke around a lot and whatever about how we're the best and this and that, but there's a lot of great other fried people doing the exact same thing that I'm doing that are absolutely amazing that I would go to any day of the week. And, you know, some people say is better than mine. And I don't take offense to that. Because there's enough love for everybody. You know what I mean?
Most definitely. As we're sort of wrapping up, man, if you were to speak to that Jerome that was in that messy middle from quitting his job and trying to get the Heartbreak Chef off the ground, what would you tell him?
Jerome back then was very spontaneous, still is, but I would have definitely said, save some damn money. Don't make a decision because you're angry. Think about it. And to anybody that's not even just my past self 4 years ago or 5 years ago, I would say think things through a little better. Like, I was fortunate enough to have good people around me to kind of like steer me this way and that way. Mm-hmm. But not everybody is that fortunate. Like, you know what I mean? And I would never tell somebody to make a decision based on anger at your job or whatever. Like, because that's at the end of the day, like sometimes you got to eat shit at your work. You don't like it, but it's a fact. You can't tell me anybody that's been at a job that hasn't done something that they had to do that they didn't want to do. You know what I mean? Like if you're working for an employer at the end of the day, if you want to get paid, like sometimes you got to play by their rules. So I would just tell them, like, sometimes you got to suck it up. And then when you feel like the time's right and you feel like you're in a financial position, or even just a life position or even a mental position to make that call, then that's when you make it.
Most definitely. That being said, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps the podcast. Hustle what you can control. So control your grind and control your life. I'm Alex.
Jerome.
That's the show, y'all. Peace.